David, ladies and gentlemen, firstly, thanks very much for the invitation to actually be here in Adelaide with you today. Let me firstly say it is something of a challenge to be actually predicting the future of today's global economic climate. In many ways, the speech I make today in terms of where we're at is different to what we were actually making 6 months ago. And you know about that better than I. Nevertheless, I predict continued success and growth of our resources and energy sector. It's also our responsibility on each and every one of us at this point in time to actually work hard to actually get investment up in Australia. And from a government's point of view, obviously we are doing our best to actually build a sense of confidence as we go through these very challenging economic times, and hence the economic security package, which is about trying to make sure that we can maintain reasonable levels of growth in Australia. And side by side with that, we also appreciate that you cannot just rely on discretionary payments by the Australian government to some sections of the Australian community. We have to work more than ever at working with state and territory governments and the business sector to maximise whatever investment we can over the next 18 to 24 months. That's about building capacity for the future. It's also about sending a very strong message to the Australian government that we will get through this challenge, because the fundamentals in Australia are actually about where we go in the future. And that's why, for example, here in South Australia at the moment, that I, as the Minister for Resources, with other ministers such as the Treasurer, are working very closely with the South Australian Government and BHP Billiton, for example, to actually make sure that we secure the expansion of the Olympic Dam and a range of other projects, including the development of the geothermal industry in South Australia. I say that because, despite the market volatility we are seeing at the moment, the fundamentals remain for continued demand growth in commodities like uranium, LNG, coal, iron ore, aluminium, nickel, copper and other minerals. These commodities are vital to the sustainable economic growth of our neighbours in the Asia-Pacific region, and importantly central to their ability to lift hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. I remind you that the world's urban population will increase by 1.4 billion people through to 2025. And some people would wonder why I would raise that issue. And the reason is simple. More than 60% of the urbanisation will occur in Asia, mostly in China and India. Urbanisation and associated industrialisation will therefore drive the huge need for investment in critical infrastructure, which is where we are well placed to fuel in terms of our economic future as a nation. That urbanisation and demand for infrastructure will generate a demand for resources and energy so that they have the required roads, railways, ports, pipelines, power stations and industrial facilities, which are about managing economic growth in those countries and, importantly to them, maintaining social cohesion. And you shouldn't separate the requirements of a country such as China to maintain heavy, high levels of economic growth to also be able to manage social change in what is a very demanding economy. Ladies and gentlemen, as many of you also appreciate, energy and commodity demand depends upon the maturity of the economy. Per capita steel consumption is a prime example. Mature economies such as the United States and the European Union consume steel at a rate of 400 kilograms per person per year. More recently, industrialised economies such as South Korea and Taiwan consume around 1,000. Developing economies such as China and India have some way to go to the height of industrialisation. China presently consumes steel at a rate of about 270 per capita, and India just 40. There are therefore many questions raised in recent weeks about the sustainability of China's demand for Australian resources, particularly iron ore. China's growth outlook for the next year may have dropped from double digits, but is still riding at about 9%. That I consider as a big number off a substantial base. Australia's commodity exports will continue to be important to sustain that growth, and that's why Australia is exceptionally well placed. Not only are we exceptionally resource rich as a nation, but we're also well placed from a transport perspective. Obviously, there are going to be some market shakeouts of both marginal suppliers and marginal customers. Prices may fall from record highs as demand and supply come more into balance, but in some ways we as a nation in recent years have ridden off the back of higher commodity prices rather than larger volumes in terms of our exports. And we have paid the price for that, because the truth of the matter is that our economy could have even been stronger if we had better invested in our future 5 and 10 years ago. But China and Japan will make steel and supply security, reliability and product quality, for which Australia is known. And we will still therefore be very important when it comes to iron ore and coking coal. I also suggest the same principles apply when it comes to energy. The urbanisation and industrialisation of Asia will continue to drive insatiable demand for Australia's uranium, LNG and coal. And also suggest in terms of the energy debate, both domestically and internationally, it's not about picking winners. The growth in demand for energy is going to create a wonderful wealth of opportunities for all energy options, both in Australia and internationally. So let's end the so-called competition that exists in some people's minds about where we go in the energy debate in the foreseeable future, both domestically and internationally. And I say that because energy security is one of the big issues confronting Australia and the world today, because whoever controls energy and access to energy resources controls economic growth. We as a nation are one of the world's energy superpowers. And that's a very sobering reality that also creates enormous responsibility for us as a nation, not only for our own energy security, but also for the energy security of the region in which we live. Almost 20% of our nation's exports are energy resources, and this proportion is growing. We are currently the 8th largest energy production nation in the world. And for a population of 22 million, that is not a bad achievement and growing in strength. Hence, projects like Olympic Dam here in South Australia are not only exceptionally important for the future of South Australia's economy, jobs and exports, but they are also exceptionally important to sustain growth in Asia. That is why I said at the outset, the Australian and South Australian governments will work together to ensure approval processes for the Olympic Dam expansion are properly conducted and in a timely manner. Continuing investment, we believe, is vital for Australia to weather the economic downturn currently facing many of our trading partners. Now more than ever, we need investment to sustain jobs, government revenue, and export income growth. Here in South Australia, we also have many other energy and resource opportunities for investment, including uranium, natural gas, coal with underground gasification potential and geothermal. In a carbon-constrained world, we have to continue to pursue new clean energy technologies such as geothermal, even though capital raising might be more challenging in the near to medium future, something that is occupying the work of my department and myself at the moment. I am therefore hopeful that the Australian government's commitment to the industry through the 50 million geothermal drilling program will go some way to demonstrating to capital markets our confidence in this industry during this trying period. Over the past decade, the South Australian Labor Government has also actively and appropriately pursued a program aimed at increased mineral exploration and development. Known as PACE, it is called the Plan for Accelerating Exploration Program, and it has appropriately made South Australia a major player in the Australian resources and energy sector, which goes back to the original history of South Australia, is actually back in a preeminent mining and resource position, as was the original development of South Australia as a state. We've therefore seen over the past decade mining exploration in South Australia increase fivefold. And I simply say to the industry and the government, congratulations on a job well done. For instance, in the past financial year alone, exploration expenditure increased by 36% on 2006-07 figures to $92.5 million. South Australia has also gained a reputation as a location that welcomes and promotes mining. The proof is the 2008 World Risk Survey conducted by Resources Stocks magazine, which only this month ranked South Australia as Australia's best jurisdiction for mining. That has now got to be the objective of other states such as Western Australia, who come off a far lower base in terms of their rating in that index. That is a great tribute to the state. It also is a great tribute to Australia. And that's also part of the reason why we are a national success in terms of our capacity to actually develop and export resources and energy opportunities in Australia. That goes hand in glove with the fact that we are a safe investment location, politically and economically stable, that we can provide investors with a world-leading regulatory environment that can always be improved, one of the objectives of the Australian government through the COAG process. Also, I might indicate from a health and safety point of view, we have skilled and trained labour, but we have to invest more in terms of actually providing for the future in terms of training, and we have safe and productive workplaces. Ladies and gentlemen, recent investment in Australia's resource and energy sector suggests industry shares may be upbeat in terms of the assessment of the future. In the 6 months to April 2008, 22 major minerals and energy sector projects with a total capital expenditure of $11.3 billion were completed. A further 97 projects are in advanced stage with projected capital expenditure of $70.5 billion. I therefore say that despite the global economic slowdown, a weakening Australian dollar, strong export prices and higher export volumes, we will get through it. One of our objectives now is to increase our export quantities, having ridden off the back of commodity price increases in recent times. And I say that because we have now got significant expansions in iron ore, copper, nickel, coal and LNG, and more importantly, there are still expansions in the pipeline which will result in further export growth potential. I also indicate that exploration investment in Australia's mineral and energy sector is also at record levels. It is therefore important that as we keep the focus on this activity, to ensure that we now have projects in the pipeline for the next 10, 20 and 30 years down the track. And that's the challenge of the government during this period of an economic slowdown. I raise that because it's an issue that the Labor Party gave a commitment on in the lead up to the last election. And that's why the Australian government is committed to the introduction of a flow-through share scheme as part of a package of exploration incentives to ensure Australia's future economic prosperity. And I know from my own experience in the industry that is exceptionally important to the juniors in the industry. The big players will be able to come through this process one way or another. We've got to make sure that we actually facilitate exploration, especially in greenfields activities, so that we are building for the future. Ladies and gentlemen, can I say that no discussion about energy and resources curating an overlook of the importance of climate change. I simply remind the audience today that the Australian government remains serious about acting responsibly on climate change. We have appropriately committed to Australia's greenhouse gas emissions to be reduced by 60% on 2000 levels by 2050. To meet this target, we have a suite of measures currently being considered. a carbon pollution reduction scheme, greater research, development and faster deployment of clean energy technologies, which to me is exceptionally important. Technology created this problem and technology will solve the problem. We also have energy efficiency and conservation and our renewable energy target. The Australian Government is going to pursue these measures in an economically responsible manner. We are committed to reducing emissions with the least economic cost whilst maintaining reliable and affordable energy supplies and also locking in the international competitiveness of Australia's future. Only this week, for example, I had the privilege of addressing the first meeting of the Australian Government's Carbon Storage Task Force. I indicated to task force members that Australia can play a vital role in the global community in developing economically responsible climate change policy. It's just not about a carbon pollution reduction scheme and international engagement leading into Copenhagen in 2009. If only it was so easy. The task force has therefore been charged with the responsibility of developing the National Carbon Mapping and Infrastructure Plan, which will prioritise the development of geological storage sites for carbon capture and storage in Australia. I consider that the task force is pivotal to the development of the government's 500 million low emission coal initiative and complements the research and development work to be undertaken by the National Low Emissions Coal Research Centre. The Australian government's commitment to reduce Australia's greenhouse gas emissions by 60% by 2050 will require substantial CO2 reductions in Australia's coal-fired power stations. That is a huge challenge to Australia. And I say that because coal provides around 80% of Australia's total electricity and accounts for 32% of Australia's greenhouse gas emissions. Therefore, no serious approach to climate change can ignore the need to reduce CO2 emissions from coal, and the government is absolutely committed to helping develop large-scale demonstration projects in order to access the feasibility of carbon capture and storage. Of course, the government's work to further develop existing low-emission industries such as LNG and uranium, and also promote the renewable sector, will play a significant role in reducing global and local emissions. And I remind you that for every tonne of CO2 emitted in Australia during production, LNG saves, for example, 4 tonnes of CO2 when consumed in Japan and 9 tonnes when consumed in China. I raise these issues because in a carbon-constrained world, Australian LNG, and even more so our uranium, will be very important to maintaining continued sustainable growth in Asia, as Asia also makes the transition in terms of reducing emissions. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll leave you with this thought. The 21st century will be the Asian century, and Australia, as an energy and resource-rich nation on Asia's doorstep, is very well placed, both geographically and economically, to be part of it, part of the engine room of growth in the global community. For those reasons, now more than ever, it is incumbent upon all of us to work together to unlock the wealth of Australia's resources and energy for the benefit of all Australians, the region in which we live, and for the benefit of the global economy. I thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon and congratulate CEDA on this very important conference.